Good morning. Good morning. So the public comment meeting is going to come to order at 9:01. This is Thursday, October 20th. For those of you that are currently in attendance, if you haven't been here before, this is what it looks like. There's actually no presentation by board staff. What it is, it's an opportunity for you to come up, introduce yourself for the record, and basically make comments in regards to the proposed rules. At this point in time, the only rules that are up for discussion, per se, are the rule changes that have been submitted to the Secretary of State's office. So this would be any rules that you maybe need clarification and understanding on. This may be positive comments in regards to the rules, and this also may be negative comments in regards to the rules. And what that is going to look like is we're going to keep track of all of that information. We have public comment today. We have it again next Tuesday in the afternoon. The idea there was to get everybody who had the possibility of coming to present, they could do that. In addition to that, as you probably know, there's also feedback that you can do via email that goes to our board's website. And what ends up happening is we gather all of the information, pros and cons, in regards to the rules, as well as clarifications, because sometimes it makes sense to board staff, but doesn't make sense to others. So we'll bring that all to the board. Our goal is to bring it to the November 4th board meeting. At that time, the board members will have a conversation in regards to it and then make any modified changes that are necessary. And then likely after the first of the year, we'll kind of move them forward to the rest of the process. So hopefully in about 6 months, the rules will be official. But we all know that takes quite a bit of time. So at this time, as I mentioned, there is no presentation. So if you want to come forward, again, for the record, we need you to introduce yourself and then ask any questions or make any comments that you would like. And please tell me you weren't expecting a presentation.
No.
Good, good.
Anyone want to go first? Okay, all right, I'll go.
Okay.
All right.
Wow, I feel so official.
Okay.
Oh, you know what I need though? It's my pen.
Thank you.
And if it matters, like I'm speaking for myself, but also for AIN, the Arizona Interest Network, and some of our thoughts and comments on some of the rule changes. Overall, like, we like the spirit of all of the rule changes. So the spirit is great. I think, like most things, it's language and what does it mean kind of for the future. And the one that kind of creates some confusion for us and some wonder is the changes to the supervision requirements of the 2 years. So must hold an active and unrestricted license for 2 years before becoming a clinical supervisor. And it's my understanding in that rule it means you have to be independently licensed for 2 years in order to become a clinical supervisor. Am I correct in that understanding?
So let me tell you specifically that one, we're going to have to provide clarification because the 2 years is specifically for those that want to do supervised private practice. So we're going to clarify that. So if you are an individual and you're providing services at an agency or at somebody else's private practice or group practice, and you're acquiring hours towards independent level licensure, as long as a clinical supervisor meets the board's educational requirements, it doesn't matter whether they're individually licensed for a day, a month, a year, you know, any length of time. It's only for those that want to go into supervised private practice.
Okay, that's what I thought, but where it was written made me confused. And I was like, what are we going to do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I appreciate you bringing that up. That was something that we've gotten a lot of feedback on. And those are things that it makes sense sometimes to board staff, where they go and what makes sense. But at the end of the day, that's not the intent. And you're familiar with supervised private practice, right?
Yeah, not as much, but that makes sense. Like, the spirit of that to me, like, absolutely, to supervise practice, you have to be practicing. We have no concerns with that piece at all. Yeah, my concern was really for the agency settings and losing supervisors. Okay, well, then we'll move along here. So Another thing that was kind of confusing with some of the new board changes is on D, on supervision.
Can you, which show?
Yeah, let me, the clinical supervision requirements are 46212D. There's something about this that strikes me as bad, for lack of a better word, but it does get confusing about whether or not there's still the requirement to see your supervisee at least once a month in order for it to count. So at least 2 hours of clinical supervision were provided during face-to-face during a 6 months period. But with this rule, we still have to see our supervisees at least every 30 days that they're seeing clients in order for them to count that month, correct?
That is correct.
So this kind of makes that confusing, and it's not clear. I recently had a supervisee that submitted a license and has an extension because this was a little unclear to us. So again, I think the spirit of it is great. It just needs some clarification.
Okay, so I believe that, okay, go ahead, okay.
So I don't remember where it actually states the 30-day, but just having those in two different places gets confusing, I guess.
Understood. So you want them in the same place.
Yeah. Because I've had lots of people ask me this question, and some people started going off of this, and I was like, no, don't do that.
Gotcha. And that's interesting because that's, I believe that's been there since I started in 2012, but I think that's fair. We do get a lot of questions on that, not so much confusion, but a lot of questions on that.
Yeah, because I think it's when it changed to the interpretation of face-to-face, when this got written differently, it then made it more confusing.
Okay.
Then the last one, obviously the big one, was about telehealth. And really it's just about, I've had lots of people interpret it differently and asking questions. So let me get there. Okay. And I don't know if you guys, if you have really any control over this, but under R461106, Section B, because that's a state statute, right? The statute is just confusing in that is it talking about, say, if I'm a therapist in Colorado and I want to see someone that moves to Arizona for 90 days. My understanding is that, right, if I'm living in Colorado, I can see someone here up to 90 consecutive calendar days without being licensed by the board. The way that it's written is just like lots of people have lots of different interpretations, so I don't think you guys can actually change that, but having some clarification on what that actually means would be helpful.
So that is really, really good, a good observation. So our intent here, so we've always had the statute of the exceptions, and one of the exceptions clearly states that if you're licensed in another state and you have a client that comes to Arizona, you're allowed up to 90 days. The intent was consecutive 90 days, and the intent behind that was if you have a client that's traveling here on vacation, if you have a client that's moving here and there's a transitional period, or if there's a catastrophe and we need people to come from other states to help us out.
Mm-hmm.
Our intent here, so that you're right, the law can't change there. And I do think the law is much more clear than our rule. The law says if you're licensed in another state, you can provide 90 days. The problem was people were deciding that it was 90 days throughout the whole year, which makes zero sense. Who provides 90 days worth of services to a client in any given year? That basically
right.
means you don't have to be a licensed here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the intent. So board staff had to constantly say the intent was 90 consecutive days, but it didn't say that. So in addition to that statute, it also said as prescribed by rule. So we were trying to take that statute and bring it to the rule to add the consecutive days so that we had something to point to.
Okay.
I don't think it's real clear, and we've had a lot of feedback on that. We've also had a lot of feedback that people that are licensed in Arizona think they're only allowed to provide 90 days of telehealth, and that's not the intent. So do you have the new language by chance? We couldn't put the new language in here because this is what's out for public comment. But as people come back and say, hey, this doesn't make any sense, we need to clarify this, we do have newer language that we're going to suggest to the board that I think it makes more clear. But again, I want to be clear with you. The intent is this rule is only for somebody not licensed in Arizona who wants to provide telehealth to clients in Arizona. They only get 90 consecutive days. So the new language is, and see if this is better for you. And again, this is we're basically defining it in rule as it states in statute. An individual licensed in good standing in another state who is not licensed by this board shall not provide blah, 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 blah. And then it goes on. So would that make it more clear?
It's so much more clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, people, that was one interpretation, and there was a few others, and I was like, okay, so that's clearly confusing. And then lastly, right, like I know there was a lot of upheaval about the telehealth and having to document in the notes the physical location and emergency contacts. So is it my understanding that with the new rule change, you will still have to verify the physical location, but it doesn't necessarily have to be in the note?
Correct. So our intent here is that the known physical location and the emergency contact information will now be addressed in the consent to treat. Okay.
Okay.
So you have that one time. The thought behind that is, as you all see your clients via telepractice, you know if your client's in the same place they're at every time, right?
Right.
So if all of a sudden you see a different wall or they're outside or people moving around, you're going to know, hey, they're no longer in this safe place that I thought that they were. That's when you're going to need to confirm. So when we say verify, we just mean verify. Again, it's just a look. Like, okay, my client's in that same room.
Okay.
You know, for example, I know you've been on my Zoom meetings, Casey. The majority of the times I'm in my office, but if there's ever a time you see a different background, okay, Toby's in a different background. All right, Toby, where are you at today? Because
right.
I need to know where you're at in case something were to happen. So that's our intent.
Okay.
You think it needs to be made more clear?
So I think the way that it's been adjusted is the verification makes that just fine. I think the only thing that needs to be made clear is if they're not in the same location, does that location need to be in like the progress note, or does that like can I keep that in my psychotherapy note, right? Like I don't really want to put a location of someone else's address in my progress note, right? If they're at a friend's house, theoretically, right? But if I have it in my psychotherapy note or somewhere, like just what do we need to have that when we verify, oh, you're not there, then what's next?
So the intent behind this is if you are providing services to a client and you realize they're not in the same location, you get their address. The intent would be to put it in the progress notes.
Okay.
You know, it's a confidential record, right? So the only person that's going to
touché.
Get those records is
yeah.
the client who knows what that address is,
mm-hmm.
Or anybody they choose to release it to. So that's the intent.
Okay, and that's fine. Just making sure that's clear, and that's something you guys I think can just clarify, and then at that point, do you want us to then verify? Because, your local emergency contacts in your informed consent, they may be different, say if they're in Flagstaff.
Well, so here's my thoughts, and this is the Toby thought behind this.
Okay.
Emergency contact is 911.
Well, that's kind of was my thought. So, like, I was a little unsure about how specific to be.
I think the intent, our board just felt that it was really important that licensees are always aware of that, whether it's an emergency hotline number.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you put all of that in your consent, like if it's an emergency, this is the number that you call, this is the number that I'll call, a DCS, or whatever you choose.
Right.
But the reality is, anywhere you are at, 911 is going to be that emergency contact for something like that. Now, if it's a suicide hotline, that's going to be a different number.
Right. Okay. Great. Because I think that's been a lot of the things as some of us trying to collect, like, what's your nearest hospital? And all of these things, and like, can we just call 911? So I think that's good. So again, if that's something, it doesn't necessarily need to be in here, but kind of clarified, because I know initially that this rule caused a lot of distress in some humans. And so just continuing to clarify that.
And we tried to, I remember back when that happened, when it was supposed to be an every progress note.
Yeah.
And we tried to clarify that. I don't know if you all remember, if you opened up the email from me, where we tried to clarify, like,
yeah,
you could put it in your consent to treat, and then every time you see them, just check the box.
Mm-hmm.
Correct physical. You don't have to necessarily write out 21123 North Adams Street.
Right.
But it was just that, some of our therapists are very much aware of where their clients are. Others are providing services while the client's shopping, driving, on holiday, those types of things. And so that was really the intent, to make sure that they realize, the importance of knowing,
yes,
where your client is.
Having a safe location to do therapy.
Safe and confidential.
Yeah.
And an emergency kind of situation that might happen.
Yeah.
So do you think, going back to, rules are obviously, we can't capture everything,
Right.
So when I'm looking back at what you talked about, the physical location during the sessions, I feel like I wrote down, but now as I write it down, I'm not sure that it's an appropriate rule. Physical location during the session and noted if different. I mean, that feels, I feel like as a therapist, you would know, you're verifying their location, and if it's different, you would address it. Or maybe, I'm just throwing that out there. Do you think we need to expand on that, or do you think that's self-explanatory?
I mean, I think to me it is. So for example, in my notes, I put at home location with no changes to emergency contact. But if they're not, what I've always done is at office location, see psychotherapy note for address. So, or I might note it, if they continue to do it, I have them change their telehealth form. So I think my only concern is it just being clear that it's got to be in, I guess, in the progress note. I don't know if that's necessarily a rule. Because I can verify, verification is different than written.
Correct.
And so in this, it says in the following progress note, right? It says progress note. We're talking about the progress note, but am I verifying or am I documenting? Am I verifying in a different location? And then does that location need to be documented? Like, I don't know how much we need to nitpick, right? But if I am thinking about semantics and someone gets called before the board, that might be a thing of, hey, I verified they're in a different location. It's in my psychotherapy note. Here's that note. But it's not in the client's record.
Well, psychotherapy note is part of the client record.
Well, like, so on our EHR systems, we have, like, the progress note. So different systems call them different things, which is also a challenge, right? So simple practice. They call the progress note, right? That's what we consider in this state our psychotherapy note. But then there's a psychotherapy note that in other states and other places, that's like information that I might keep for myself, like noting something that's not required to be in the progress note. That's kind of where I keep that information that's not required. So I think sometimes there's a discrepancy because we use these big national systems that subscribe, right? So I don't know how much you really want to get into the semantics of that and how much it matters to you, but it is a thought or a tread. And I don't know if it's a matter of just shifting the rule or just continuing to educate.
My thought would be to continue to educate, because the reason we came up with the word verification was because the board members want it written. And that basically means every progress note, you have to write down where they're at.
Right.
Rather than, oh, they're in a different spot. Where are you at today? So that was that whole verification thing. You know, and you're right. Those are always ways that we process things. If somebody were to come before the board where something were to happen to a client and we found out that client happened to be in a different location and the therapist said, well, I verified it and, you know, here it is, that's kind of a moot point.
Right.
Obviously, if the client's in a different spot and the licensee doesn't address it, and, you know, something were to happen to the client, that could be a problem.
Right. I love the word verification. It makes it so much easier. Of course, I just go to the gray area. So really, I think it's supervisors and everyone educating, what does verification look like if it's different?
Okay. Well, and I think as you're talking to, and I wrote myself a note here, I think that something that's really important that we haven't always done in the past is once this is all done and these rules go into effect, prior to them going into effect, I think what we'll do is send an email out, again, assuming everyone reads it. We'll send an email out letting them know that the proposed rules are going to be going into effect on, you know, this date. And then each rule that changes kind of do the intent behind it. The intent behind this is if your client is in a different place than what's in your consent to treat, to note it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the intent.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
And those emails are helpful, FYI. People see the emails and they're like, why is the board emailing me? Right? So
I'm even asked to be unsubscribed. Those are my favorite.
Oh, Toby, don't tell me things like that. It makes my heart hurt. But, okay, I can't speak for them. Those emails are always very, for me personally, very reassuring. So if that's any feedback for you.
Appreciate that.
That's all I got.
All right. Thank you, Casey.
Hello, I'm Courtney Welling with Healthy Connections Counseling, private practice. So just to piggyback on the conversation we were just having, those emails are really helpful because we don't always know the intent, which is why we came here today to hear what kind of conversations are happening around these and how we're reading these rules. We're interpreting them the way you're intending, which is always tricky when you're sitting in your office by yourself or consulting with your colleagues. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this. The question I have going back to supervision relates to the 2 years for supervised private practice, and as a supervisor is getting approval for that supervision. It sounds like somebody could still come out of, become fully licensed, and then become a supervisor in less than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to clarify that somewhere? I don't know if it's appropriate in the rules, but if you are going to supervise in private practice, you will need that. We have that in there, but it is not under the education piece. And it's not an education requirement, but I read that myself because I'm in this situation and I was like, uh-oh, what do I do?
So you,
fortunately, I'm outside of that for this situation, but it was not clear. I felt like I could have slipped through the cracks pretty easily that way.
So let me clarify what you're saying then. Are you saying the educational requirements for a clinical supervisor, that there should be a sentence in there saying that you must be licensed at the independent level for 2 years if you are going to provide supervised private practice?
And maybe just refer to the rules for supervised private practice there.
either state that clearly or refer back to those rules.
And I think sometimes in certain instances it's okay to have something in there twice. Have it here and maybe here so they don't have to do that.
Well, I go here first if I'm looking for clarification. I try to read through the rules before I reach out to you. So I think that would be helpful.
Understood. Okay. And being in supervised prior practice, you understand the intent behind why we're requiring the 2 years?
Absolutely. I absolutely do, and it makes a lot of sense. I happen to be in a situation where I have a veteran counselor who just never got her full license, so now she's going through the process. So I'm lucky. I'm one of the lucky ones. The other piece that's not related to supervision is back to telehealth again. Being in private practice and doing trauma therapy, like my group here does, we get a lot of developmental, relational neglect fractures. And so when somebody moves out of state and we have become a safe relation for them, you know, we're following the rules, and I understand the intent there because we cannot regulate out of our state lines, but I can't be here and not throw that nugget out there. Is there anything that we can do to help straddle that so that we can
compact,
do what we're intending? Okay.
We're trying, but Nationals pushed back on that. They're not willing to do it.
And I think there's 17 signed up for the counseling compact. Social workers will be right behind them. Arizona missed the boat, but I bet this year both will, I do believe both will be in legislation and likely pass this year. So the compact is big. I mean, you know, we get that question a lot, Courtney. You know, my client moved to Kansas. Can I provide services? And I reiterate multiple times, you are licensed in Arizona. We can only regulate you in Arizona. Call Kansas. If you call Kansas, if you don't, it's not our issue because we don't regulate you there. Mm-hmm. With that said, if you decide to provide services to somebody in Kansas and Kansas takes issues with it and they issue a cease and desist order or something like that and it comes back to the board, then our board can take issue with it. We haven't seen any of that yet, but I think what we need to be cognizant of, and I think you all know this, people are kind of just doing whatever, wherever, and we need to protect that profession. We need to make sure that you're licensed in the appropriate state, whether you want to be or not. So
sure.
That compact is going to be the answer. We need to push it. And the majority of our licensees know intent on MFTs or substance abuse, but out of our 15,000 licensees, about 12,500 are counseling and social workers. So if we could just get that, we've mm-hmm. eliminated, 95% of the issue.
Yeah. So, well, I appreciate that. We'll get more involved. Maybe we'll link up with Casey. And
I can help in any way as well, too. Right. I have a lot of contacts across the street, but it would be nice to have somebody so it's not just myself. Last year was just myself for a while. So it was.
Thank you for all you're doing.
Well, it didn't work out, so.
In line with that, too, protecting the profession and also thinking about how we continue to meet our clients' needs, because most of the people I know are really just want to continue to serve the client in the best way that's possible, and we've developed this really safe, confidential relationship, and we are taking those precautions. I know many therapists who have gone as far as getting licensed in multiple states for that purpose. But that made me think of life coaching and what's happening there. And I don't know if this is the appropriate place for that, but if we're talking about protecting the profession and what does that mean? Because I've also seen people leave the profession to go do that because it's less regulated. Or people that are doing both. And I've had people ask me the question about, can I offer if somebody wants this life coaching? And I'm like, I don't think you can, because what I'm thinking from my perspective, I don't know what I would do differently. That's not what I'm doing with them therapeutically.
Right. So a couple things on that. Unfortunately, this would not be the appropriate venue to talk about that. because it's not part of the agenda. With that said, I have a lot to say about that. So once we get done with public comment and we turn the audio off, if nobody else comes in, I'd be happy to address that with you.
Great.
And if not today, I can do it at any other given time as well.
That's fantastic. Thank you. I don't think I have any other comments for right now. But thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Dina Charter from AMDR Transformation.
Say one more time.
Dina Charter. Licensed clinical therapist, LPC. So just adding on to that, just to clarify, so if we have a client who is just away at school that comes back, does that also apply if they're in a different state?
Yes.
Okay.
And my hope is that other states have something similar to our 90 days. You know, that's my hope. But I don't know if they all have that. So.
I forgot that. Can I say that?
Absolutely, Casey. So I think the other thing is with the supervised practice two-year limit, just looking at when that rule goes into effect, what happens to those that have already been approved?
Great question. So when you say that, what you mean is individuals that have to have an independent level license for 2 years, anybody that's already been approved will be grandfathered in.
Okay. So I just think that, right, like clarification always on that. No, and that would be important too. I think that would be something that we would include in the email. If you think about it this way, I'm going to say any, as I'm saying any, let me think about this. Anytime a rule changes, it's from that day forward.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So, but I think that clarification is important. You know, I would say probably the majority of our supervised private practice supervisors meet that requirement, but we do have a handful that probably do not. And I think, obviously, I think it's important based on what we're allowing them to do. So I think that's a good thing, and that's something that we can clarify in an email when those rules go into effect.
Cool. That's all.
Any other comments? No. All right, we'll go ahead and turn the audio off. Unless we have more people come in, we will turn it back on. So we are back on the record at 9:36. We've had another individual show up for public comment. Did you have any comments that you would like to say in regards to the rules that are being proposed?
I know I walk in the middle.
Okay, so just so you know, and we did start at 9, there is no presentation from board staff. This is really public comment. So all of the rules have been sent out for public comment approximately about 3 months ago. And so that information is on the website, as well as we have an email where individuals can send rule feedback. The intent for today is really for anybody that wants to come, ask questions, clarifications on the rules that are being proposed. If they have some positives they want to say about the rules being proposed, some negatives about the rules being proposed. So far today, we had a number of individuals talk about the clarity in regards to the telepractice for those from out of state. We've had a clarity in regards to having to be individually licensed for 2 years to provide supervised private practice. A clarity regarding the physical location verification of the client for telepractice, as well as maybe more clarity in the direct hours in regards to having 1 hour of clinical supervision per month of supervised work experience. I believe that was all of the feedback as of yet. So mainly just clarification, which I think is really important. As I said, you know, earlier, you know, board staff, you know, we put this together. We have a rule writer that puts this together, and it always makes sense to us. But when it gets out, people read it and go, well, that's not really what that says. And we think, well, yeah, that's what it says. But then when we hear from others, we've noticed that there's a few things specifically on the telepractice piece in regards to B, where we're trying to make a rule for the exemption to licensure. It's the one that says if you are out of state and you have a license out of state and you come into Arizona, you can provide services to a client in Arizona for 90 days. That's what the statute says. It's been that way for years. Nobody ever questioned it until COVID, and now everybody wants to know, was that 90 consecutive days or is that throughout the year? If it was throughout the year, my question was, who gets 90 sessions in a year? So the rule is now trying to put the intent in, which is 90 consecutive days. So if your client's on vacation here, if your client moves here and you need to transition to a new therapist, or if maybe there's a catastrophe, some kind of a natural catastrophe in Arizona where we need services from other people outside of the state. So, and we've already kind of clarified that, so this is only pertains to people not licensed in Arizona. So yes, yes. I really would encourage you all to, as I said, right now it's scheduled to go before the November 4th board meeting. I mentioned earlier it may not be the best meeting to come to because it's going to be very short for other stuff, but it may be something that after that November 4th board meeting, to reach out to see, you know, what the board, you know, kind of determined based on language. But so far, it sounds like the spirit of the changes are appropriate. It's just making sure it's clear to our licensees. And the other thing that we will do when we actually get a date for it to go into effect, we'll send an email out saying these new rules go into effect on such and such a date, and just try to take them in paragraph form on the intent. And we have done that before. I think we did that the last time in regards to several things, specifically the physical location, so which I think will be helpful. We were talking earlier about putting the 1 hour under the direct client contact piece. Right now it's currently under supervised work experience. For any month in which an applicant provides direct client contact, the applicant shall obtain at least 1 hour of clinical supervision.
Same statute as where the face to, because I don't have it in front of me, is it under A, B, C?
It's not.
Yeah, that's got to be in the educational requirements versus the clinical requirements.
Yeah, so, and I think that's what's, you know, and I appreciate hearing this because maybe it makes sense to have it both places, because right now it's currently under supervised work experience. So supervised work experience are, you know, the hours that you're acquiring for direct client contact. So that's where it's at right now, is under supervised work experience, which is where it says you must have the 16 hours of direct client contact, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. where you had asked for it to possibly go is under R46212, and that's clinical supervision requirements, where it talks about everything that's required of clinical supervision, as well as how many hours can be, you know, by phone, those types of things.
Yeah, if it's in both places, I think that makes it clear. Granted, it's our responsibility to know it's there, right? Like, it's not yours. But it does make it kind of confusing.
So, would you mind coming up to the microphone? So, when you say that, so we can only, at this point, we can really only, we can only add or take away rules that are currently out for public comment.
I'm not asking anything to be added.
Okay.
I'm just saying the rule that's there is a little vague, and I think needs a little bit more description.
Can you tell me which one specifically you're looking at?
Specifically, yes, one sec. R46212, clinical supervision requirements. I'm wondering if the first thing that comes to mind is, I know the definition of contemporaneous. I'm wondering if perhaps that could be added either there or in, like, with an asterisk, a star, in an appendix, because I don't think most people who are just looking for a supervisor may know what that means.
So you want the definition then within 212?
Yes.
And do you think the supervisees are reading 212?
They should be, yeah. I mean, I speak to supervisees all the time and to associate level therapists, and I know that they are going through the requirements in interviewing their supervisors, and I think there is a little bit of misunderstanding on their part in what they should even ask a supervisor and what is expected of their supervisor. So I'm wondering if perhaps there was a little more clarity in the board rules. Maybe that would help them.
To add the definition of contemporaneous there.
Okay.
Yes. And just for the record, Sophia Hasid.
Yes.
I think that that's something the board members could consider. It's interesting because I know when they define contemporaneous, there's been multiple emails and education going out. And it's very, very rare, but on occasion we do have people that are signing 6 months, a year later, which is rather concerning that they don't understand the importance of that. But I think that that's something that we could consider putting in there. I'm not sure that...
is there a place where contemporaneous is defined? So perhaps,
yeah, it's in that initial.
You can put contemporaneous according to, and then so someone that wants to perhaps look up what contemporaneous is, they could look at it there. I just think there's a lot of confusion, and that's why I'm here. I want there to be more knowledge for associates because I see the misunderstanding they have when they have someone supervising them. They put all their trust in someone for 2-3 years only to be told that those hours don't count.
It's a very rare occasion, but it does happen.
Yeah, it does. Even if it happens to one person every 6 months, that is still, for something so simple,
I would like there to be more understanding for that person.
No, and I appreciate that, and I'm also making notes right here as well. You know, that's something that the board can consider, but in addition to it, we were talking about the newsletter earlier. I think that that's something we could put out there too, definition of, because the definition has been there for quite some time, and about 99.99% of individuals know what that means, but I think it would be helpful to kind of remind them.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. If there's nothing else, we'll go ahead and turn the audio off for now until somebody else comes in. Otherwise, it's dead space that gets uploaded to the website. Thank you, Sophia.
I'll be right back.
Oh, okay.